So I happen to be there, notice things, say something, and then have the courage to act on those convictions. And I think that's what kind of separates a lot of entrepreneurs from, and you know this, Shahid, like how many entrepreneurs that you talk to that have this great idea that they're going to do later? Let me tell you about my brilliant idea for a business that I'm going to do eventually in the future. No, just go.
Welcome to Super Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm your host, Shahid Durrani. Today we have with us Michael Jorgens. Michael is a super wine geek who started the Kingdom of Bhutan's wine industry from scratch, something that hasn't been done in the world in 200 years. After discovering in 2016 that the country had no vineyards. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Can you share like what exactly happened that allowed you to discover that this one country has beautiful land, but no vineyards?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't like I was sitting around thinking, what I should do is go start up in the Himalayas.
That wasn't
how this went down at all. But There was a confluence of a bunch of different interesting factors that all contributed to this. So one of the biggest ones was my girlfriend read a book in high school about a woman who moved to Bhutan, fell in love with the place, and stayed. And so the entire time we've been together, which has been 20 years now, she's like, oh, but now I want to go to Bhutan. I don't know what a Bhutan is. I'm like, whatever, man. Fine. So I'm hearing about this all the time. The second thing that happened was I'm studying to become the 61st American to qualify as a master of wine. And so as part of that, I've been traveling the world, going to every major global wine region. So I've been everywhere. I've been to every continent. I've seen every wine region that there is to see, and I've studied it in depth. And then the third thing was I was running stupid marathons in crazy places. And so I ended up on some email list where I got an email that said in the subject line, Bhutan Wine Marathon. Just Bhutan Marathon. And so I'm like, oh, cool. That's that place that my girlfriend's always talking about. So I clicked on it and it was like, we're going to open up the borders for Bhutan's first international marathon. We're going to take 10 people from the US. If you'd like to be considered, submit an application. And I was like, done. And I submitted an application and they picked us. And so I go to my girlfriend and I'm like, hey, baby, guess who's the best boyfriend in the world? I'm taking you to Bhutan. And she goes, oh my God, we're going to the Himalayas. And I go, no, we're not. Bhutan's in Indonesia. And she goes, no, it isn't. Look it up. And
I
pulled out my phone and looked it up. And I was like, oh no, I just signed us up to run a marathon in the Himalayas. And that's how we got there. And then when we got there, everywhere I looked, like Westerners, we think of the Himalayas and you think of these glaciers and these K2 and Mount Everest and stuff. And that is all there. But the reality of it is most of it is this really fertile land that has microplastic-free water. Bhutan's the only carbon-negative country on the planet. And they literally grow some of the best crops there in weird, obscure verticals. Cardamom and red rice. The best red rice in the world comes from Bhutan. So anyway, so I'm there, I'm in the country, and I'm eating all this produce that's just amazing. And in my head, I'm like, oh, there has to be wine here. I can't wait to find it. It's going to be spectacular. And so I'm asking everybody, I'm like, where's the wineries? And everyone's like, what are you talking about? And finally I ended up at a dinner with some of the government folks. And they said, hey, where are your wineries? I'm not leaving until I try your wine. And they go, we don't have wine. And I go, how is this possible? This fertile Shangri-La environment, like you don't have grapes? And they go, no, we don't. And I go, you have to fix this now. You need to get this done. For the world of wine, this needs to happen. And I never thought I was going to do it. I just thought that they should do it pretty passionately. And that led to a conversation, which led to another conversation, which led to a third conversation. And eventually the country was like, yeah, we want to do this. And we'd like to do it with you. And I was like, you're going to give this punk rock skateboard kid from Los Angeles
you're going to give me this blank canvas of an entire country to create a wine industry? Holy shit, I'm all in on this. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened. This hasn't been done since New Zealand did it in the 1800s. I'm all in.
Wow.
So that's how it happened.
Incredible.
Yeah, just a bunch
incredible.
Of odd coincidences.
So it's funny how things unfold, how life unfolds. Maybe you had different plans and then look where it took you.
I have a theory about that, actually. I think that
the
universe is constantly giving us opportunities. And most of the time, we're going and we're too focused on our errand and getting to the dry cleaner and picking up the kids and doing it. Like, we overthinking or just not paying attention. There's this old story, this fable about this couple that they serendipitously get together and they have a wonderful evening. They say, this could never happen. We should just go live our lives and see if we were meant to meet later. And then they never do. And then before they die, they bump into each other again. They're like, why didn't we do this? Like, the universe never made it happen. It's like, it did. It gave it to you and you were too goddamn
gave you the chance.
Yeah. And so I happened to be there, notice things, say something, and then have the courage to act on those convictions. And I think that's what kind of separates a lot of entrepreneurs from, and you know this, Shahid, like how many entrepreneurs that do you talk to that have this great idea that they're going to do later? You know, let me tell you about my brilliant idea for a business that I'm going to do eventually in the future. No, just go.
It's a continuously in a loop of planning.
Always searching.
Yeah, there's always researching, just trying to get it perfect. And the funny thing is that you said it perfectly, that we are given these opportunities, but because we are very busy in the mind, we miss them. And then there's the lack of faith in our potential that we can actually do something with this. With you, it hit home. It felt so real and so good to you that you just went all in. And if everybody went all in on these guidance that we get, I think more and more people would be successful.
I think it's a combination of having the awareness to appreciate when the universe is presenting you with something, having the conviction to take a stand or take an approach, and then having the courage to execute without fear of failure. Like, we're failing all the time. Like,
all the time.
It 500 feet all the way up to 9,000 feet. We don't know what's going to grow where. We don't know how to grow it. We have 17 different grapes growing there and we're trying all different stuff. And I know some of my vineyards aren't going to work. I know the majority of my grapes aren't going to work. I don't need to have them all work. I need one to work. I need two to work. I need to find that one thing, and being paralyzed by failure. I want to figure let's figure out if Riesling's not working there, let's stop planning Riesling. Let's play a Cabernet, you know?
Yeah. I don't have a problem with failing. I just want to fail fast so I can find the solution, right?
The analogy I'll use, and I like telling the story because I think it just speaks to how we're trying to do this. I once ran a marathon in Antarctica, way in the middle of the continent, down near the South Pole. We ran, flew a jet in, landed on a glacier, ran a marathon. And there's no course, there's no help, there's nothing there. But what they did do is they drove a snowmobile around in a 13-mile circle and said, run on this track and do two laps. And so me being from Southern California, like, I had all the wrong gear. And I get out there and my goggles immediately freeze over and I can't see. And they've told us, do not take your goggles off because you will go snowblind very quickly. And I'm trying to stay in this little trench. And so I'm running this marathon in negative 30 degrees weather by braille. I basically would just run until I hit the side of the trench and then I would fall down. And then I would pick myself up and run until I hit the other side of the trench and then I would fall down. And I did this for miles, so much so that the people behind me reported me to the medical authorities because they're like, this guy just keeps falling. He's having a stroke or something. And the whole time, all I was thinking was, you just keep going. You pick yourself up and you just going. And that's the way that being an entrepreneur is, or certainly with the online company. You run until you fall and you pick yourself up and you reorient and you keep going until you fall again and you pick yourself up and you just keep going. And eventually you get to the finish line.
Yeah, but that's not great, Michael.
It's not fun.
It's not fun. That's why mindset is crucial in this entire journey of entrepreneurship. You know, when we go in this journey without having the foundation, that's when it gets ugly.
Yeah. You have to be a certain type of crazy to start something amazing. Mm. And you
lovely crazy.
And you have to believe in it. And believe in yourself and just go.
That's awesome. Did you still do any soil testing to see, to make sure, because it's a brand new territory? No one has ever tried to grow grapes and you're doing it. You must have sent it a team or made them actually research.
Yeah. So the problem with Bhutan is it's this little Shangri-La valley tucked away in the Himalayas, but there's not a lot of infrastructure. So they don't have things like weather stations all over the place. So there's no data.
Got it.
And when you go and you talk to people, they're like, oh yeah, it never rains here, but it rains over there because the rain
come
in and they hit that stone on that mountain and the rain stops. So everything's different. And so we tried initially to take a very scientific approach to it. And I was working with a professor from Cornell University and another professor from London who had done a lot of soil research in Bhutan. And inevitably, the more research we did, the more it became apparent that we didn't know. And so I had a choice to make of, we can keep studying this thing forever, or we can grip it and rip it and start planting stuff and see what happens. And we elected for the grip it and rip it approach. And so that's why I have all these vineyards and all these different altitudes and all these different varietals that I know are not all going to work. I don't need them all to work. And now that we're 7 years into this, we're starting to understand how this is going to play out. And I think we'll be fine tuning it over the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So your next generation and your family are going to have fun with this.
My grandkids are going to be rich as shit. But
they're
going to die penniless and alone in the woods. No, it's interesting. One of the biggest trends in the wine world is climate change. And so if you think about places like Champagne, the reason that Champagne exists in that style is because it's so cold there. That's the only way they could make drinkable wine. Now, as it's heating up there, it's ruining Champagne. So all the Champagne houses are going to England and they're buying land in England to make Champagne, which creates all kinds of legal weird issues and stuff. But one of the things one of the narratives that's out there in the wine space today is this idea that the Himalayas might be the next great wine destination for the next 500 years because of the impact of climate change and the access to pristine wildernesses. And there's some companies pouring giant money into the Himalayas on the Chinese side, which creates a whole other set of issues. I'm the only guy doing it in Bhutan, but there are other people doing it in China. And I might have just been dumb lucky. I don't know. We'll see.
No, it's all set up that way, it looks like. But
we're figuring it out.
Are any other companies approaching Bhutan right now, or you have exclusive right of refusal?
So I think right now I do have exclusivity. I think other companies could approach the country, and if they were bringing the right things to the table, I think the country would entertain it. I think where we see lower barriers to entry is China. And so that's where Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy, which is obviously a global multi-billion dollar wine company, they're doing a wine project in the Himalayas on the Chinese side. And there's another company called Dangshen Di, which is a Chinese company that's doing a wine project there. And the wines are selling anywhere between $300 and $1,200 a bottle. Pretty high premium type of wines, which kind of speaks to the fact that my dumb running the marathon through the terrace isn't going, this place looks like it would be a good place to grow wines. They thought about it differently and concluded the same thing that I did, which is we can grow some pretty amazing wines here. So we'll see. We made our first wine last year. We have the first barrel aging right now. We'll do our first commercial harvest this summer, and we'll find out how right I was.
That's exciting.
It's like at the casino, just like throwing the dice and just waiting for a hard eight to come out. Just going, I think I got this. We'll see.
So it's business. There's a lot of risk. And your risk is quite unique because it's unknown territory. Now, when it comes to unknown territory and setting up a new enterprise, you must have faced some challenges. Is there any specific challenge that you faced and you overcame that another entrepreneur can learn from?
So I think one of the biggest challenges that we faced was, is this possible? And you think about the wine world, grapes. Grapes grow everywhere in the world, everywhere. And the places that have been making wine have been, in some cases, doing it for thousands of years because grapes grow there. Grapes aren't in the Himalayas. Why not? One argument could be, they never got there. The birds never ate the grapes and pooped out the seeds and flew over the Himalayas. Marco Polo never went there. The Silk Road didn't go through there. The Roman army never went and tried to conquer it. And so they never brought it there. So that's one narrative. That's my narrative, by the way. There's another narrative that says, can't be done. Can't be done. It's too inhospitable. It's too high. It's too cold. It's too hot. It's too whatever. And so when we were talking to people, they, particularly in the government, they were like, no, this can't work. We can't do this here. And I kept saying, like, how do you know? What wine regions have you been to? What analysis have you done?
The naysayers.
The naysayers. And finally, we got to a point where I was just like, hey, guys, you don't know, and I don't know, but we can try it and see what happens. And we need to commit to trying because it takes years to build a vineyard. It takes years to get the grapes growing. And then you make the wine. It takes a year to age the wine. If you guys are willing to bet a decade of your life on this, that's how strongly I feel about this. I'm willing to bet a decade to try this. Are you in? And they were like, yes, we're in. And so it was that overcoming the naysayers who hold the keys to the castle, right? These are the people that are letting us plant the grapes. You know how hard it is to import an invasive vine species into the only carbon negative country on the planet. Have you got that wrong?
Good.
And like, you also have to convince them that, like, we're going to do this, but we're also not going to harm anything at the same time while we're doing it. It was really hard. And inevitably, I think it was just my dog conviction that this was going to work and it needed to happen for the wine world. That they're okay, we don't know, but this guy seems pretty sure of himself, so let's give it a go.
I think so. That
would be maybe my thought for, like, entrepreneurs who are sitting there. Like, you're gonna get naysayed, and you can listen to them, or you can ignore it.
Are you self-funding this, or you have investors, or are you looking for investors?
We did it. I funded the first round, paid for it 100% out of my pocket. We did a Series A funding round when we got to phase two, which we booked it with some of my friends and some venture capital people. I think there probably will be a second round, a Series B offering that's probably in the $20 to $30 million range, I'm guessing. But we got to figure this out. We'll probably look to some institutional investors to partner with on that. My goal would be to not have too many cooks in the kitchen. This is already a weird enough project, right? Hey, let's go make wine in the Himalayas. Give me some money. That's a weird business case to present in a place that it's never had wine before. It's never been done before. Of the risk.
Definitely.
We're not going to know for 7 years. Here, let's go take a multi-million dollar flight on this. It has to be the right partner that understands the vision that what we're trying to do and build this industry, not for us, but for our grandchildren.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can see that vision and that passion. It's a big one. It's a big risk, but the indicators are all there. It's a very unique project. The location, the soil, the product could potentially become one of the top ones.
I'll tell you a story. I was there last October and I had some of our investors with us, and we went to walk across this suspension bridge in Punaka. And it's just a touristy thing to do. It's probably a quarter mile long. It's over this big river. It's a fun thing to do. So we're walking across the suspension bridge, and there's this kid, this Bhutanese kid, and he's selling fruit out of a bucket.
And he's just sitting there and he's like, hey, you guys want some of this fruit? And we're like, yeah, we'll take some fruit. And so we're eating this fruit. And one of my investors is sitting there and he's eating this fruit. And he's, this is amazing. What is this? And I go, I have no idea. And so I'm trying to ask the kid like what this is. And the kid's, oh, it's bullywog. Yeah, but what is it in American? I don't know what that is. And so one of our buddies comes back over and we go, hey, Karma, can you figure out what this is that we're eating? And he goes, yeah. And he jabbers at the kid a little bit and Zonka. And then he comes back and he goes, you guys would call this a guava. And Henry, who's one of my investors, he's, this is the best guava I've ever had in my life. This is amazing. And I go, that's our business model right there. If you can grow the best guava that makes someone go, holy cow, this is an amazing guava. What can you do with a wine grape?
And mix it together next.
Yeah.
Make it a guava flavor.
I don't know if we'll go that far, but the, the capacity to grow.
Yeah, no, good point.
Yeah. But it was so,
no, that's
felt so real that he got to experience this kind of epiphany moment of, oh my God, this is an amazing fruit. Oh yeah. So follow that forward. Grape is also a fruit. If this is amazing, what do you think that grape is going to taste like? I can't wait. Literally, we have our first wine aging in a barrel right now, and I haven't been able to taste it yet. I'm just champing at the bit to get back there and finally take that first sip and go, we'll see. We'll see if I was right.
Oh, man.
It's crazy.
Michael, I'm wishing you all the best with that. It must be really exciting for you and the investors to open that barrel right before it goes commercial. So great job on that. Can you share what you feel your innermost superpower is that got you to this point in life?
My innermost superpower. I went through a pretty crazy divorce. The divorce proceedings lasted 13 years. I was only married for 11. The divorce lasted longer than the marriage. And through that process, you just get beaten down. You just get the shit kicked out of you by the courts and the lawyers and everything. And I really had to take stock of who I am and who I wanted to be. And at the time, I was climbing the corporate ladder and being the corporate guy and striving for the corporate things and the big house and the fancy cars and all that stuff. And all that got stripped away from me. And I had to think about who I am as a person and what do I want. And what I concluded, and this took a couple of years to be able to figure out the right words to express the way that I felt about it. But what I concluded is what I want to do with my short time on this planet is I want to do epic shit with cool people. If it's not epic,
I like that.
And if the people aren't cool, I don't want to do it. And so that became the bar by which I measure every aspect of my life. And is that a superpower? I don't know. What I do know is when people are sitting around on a Saturday and they're like, hey, do you want to go do this? I'm like, is it epic? Are the people cool? And if the answer is no, I'm not doing it. But if the answer is yes,
awesome,
I'm all in. And so I think that enthusiasm for trying to seek those pieces out is perhaps a superpower for me.
No, I love that, Michael. I love that. That just adds another level to enthusiasm. And plus, you'll see you're going to start being introduced to many opportunities that's going to help you become more enlightened as well with that type of mentality. So wishing you best, Michael. Appreciate your time today.
I was going to tell another story, but now we're good.
Go ahead, please.
No, I think if you sit around and you say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, what do you want to do with your entrepreneurialism? You could create a factory that stamps out, I don't know, Legos or widgets or whatever. Or you could try to create an app that changed the world like Facebook did. Or you could, like, there's this broad spectrum of all of the things that you could possibly do. Some of them are epic and don't make any money. Some of them are boring and make you the richest person in your town. And neither of those things matter really that much at the end of the day. I think what matters most is that you do something that's true to who you are. And if the goal is be a billionaire, go stamp out bricks or whatever. If the goal is have this amazing story to tell and hope maybe there's some money out of it, then go
plant vineyards in the Himalayas. That's a, you get to pick.
Yeah, no, I love it.
You get to pick.
Yeah.
But
no, that's great.
There's no right answer, right? It's for yeah. you and just do something that's
to true. Each its own.
Yeah. Whatever's true to your yeah. way of thinking, you
yeah. yeah. What does success mean to you? That's the most important.
Correct. And for me, what that means yeah. is I want to die at 120 years old with the best stories to anybody else. Totally broke.
If I'm around, come back on the show.
Yeah, I want to be broke. I want yeah. all my organs on the verge of internal failure. I had it. I lived it, man. I did it.
Amazing. No, great, Michael. I love your enthusiasm. I love the energy. I definitely would love to see where this goes. So definitely keep in touch. And once you launch this, let us know. Come back on. We could continue this conversation and link these two episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, if you want to go visit the Himalayas and drink some wine over there, that's a pretty cool experience too. You're more than welcome.
Definitely. If you're doing something official, let us know and we'll definitely plan something.
Yeah, we actually are. We're doing this summer, the first commercial harvest. We're bringing 10 groups of people over for 10 different weeks so they can all participate and help make the country's first wine. So for those of you who are interested, you can go see it on all the details on the Club DeVin website, which is clubdvin.com.
Awesome.
Check it out.
Awesome. Audience, check it out. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you. Keep in touch and we'll talk soon.
Cheers, man.